What's happening, everybody? Welcome to the show. We are your hosts, Chase and Miles, and we are at the Lucky Duck. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. Miles, please introduce our next guest.
Oh boy, do we have a good one for you. Today we have a very special guest who's no stranger around here. It's my incredible wife, Sarah. She's been on a few times, and every time, it just gets better. If you don't know by now, Sarah's been juggling life as a content creator, and today we're diving back into that topic. Today we'll explore more about what it really means to be a content creator, the daily life, and the industry dynamics. Sit back and get ready to learn about the behind the scenes of Sarah's creative journey. I want to find out how she puts up with me. Hello, my wife.
And your boss.
Yeah, my boss. That's true.
The first question is putting up with Miles a full-time job?
No, I couldn't do it without him.
Yeah. So I'm a good employee then.
Yeah, you're a good coworker.
Yeah, you always say you gave me a job I didn't ask for.
I used to call him my sidekick.
Nice.
Well, you weren't supposed to tell anyone that.
Little sidekick, L-I-L.
It wasn't little. It was big.
Little kick. You call him little kick? Yo, little kick.
No, but I'm going to.
No, we don't do that. We don't put down our employees.
Yeah.
We're going to get HR.
Next paycheck.
You have to foster a culture of positivity and inclusiveness.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. And that's what we're going to do.
Hell yeah.
That's what we do.
Cheers. Welcome back to the show.
Yay. Yeah.
Miles, what are we drinking today?
This is, it's actually a liquor that is one of Sarah's favorites. That's what the base is. So that's going to be Mezcal. And if people don't know what Mezcal is, Mezcal is a tequila, right?
Yeah.
And it's a type of tequila that is smoky because they smoke it with something.
Yeah, so Mezcal and tequila are both agave spirits, so the derivative of the agave plant, but they differ in several different ways. Mezcal can be made from a variety of agave plants, while tequila is made from a Blue Weber agave plant. So they come from a different, I guess, variation of agave. Production-wise, Mezcal is traditionally made by roasting the agave in underground pits, while tequila is made by roasting the agave above ground in an oven.
Wow, underground pits. I had no idea.
Yeah. Whoa.
Okay, I didn't know tequila was roasted.
I guess you do now.
So it's like the plant that's roasted and it turns it into tequila, I guess.
I guess so.
Okay.
The flavor of mezcal is a smoky flavor, while tequila has a fruity, sweet, and earthy taste. And then in terms of alcohol content, mezcal is generally a little bit stronger than tequila, with an alcohol by volume of around 55% in comparison with tequila, which is typically around a 35 to 55%.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't either.
And then region-wise, Mezcal is primarily made in Mexico's, I'm going to butcher this, but Oaxaca region, while tequila can only be made in specific regions of Mexico, including Jalisco, Guanajuato, Michoacan, and I'm butchering all of these guys. I'm sorry. Tamaulipas.
I'm offended.
Yeah. And then finally, aging. Tequila is aged in a different types of categories, includes like Blanco, which is like the silver, which is 1 to 2 months, and then Reposado is 2 to 12 months, and Añejo, 1 to 3 years. And I don't believe Mezcal is typically aged.
Interesting.
Yeah. So there's the crash course.
Yeah, I basically just thought smoky or not smoky.
I mean, so you would be correct.
That's all that I knew. And I was like, I like the smoky, but that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're doing an old Mezcal old fashioned. And that's basically, so it's the Mezcal, the bitters, the orange peel. And then what is the color that goes in it?
It is Angostura bitters, which is a very specific type of bitters that is key to making an old fashioned. That is what you'll find in like a typical whiskey old fashioned. In this case, instead of a simple syrup, we're using an agave nectar, which is an organic extract. And then we also, in a typical mezcal old fashioned, it is cut with some tequila. So this does have a blend of tequila and mezcal.
Ah, okay. Nice. Yeah. Didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, really good. I'm excited for it. Sarah discovered mezcals before I did. In fact, you introduced them to me. It was somewhere, and I remember you got it, and we were both like, "Whoa, this is amazing!" We did a White Russian mezcal White Russian once, and that was super good too.
That's super weird to me. Yeah,
it is super weird. Mm-hmm. But it's weird how that smoky flavor, I think, can change a drink a little bit. Sometimes it's too overpowering, I think. You don't want smoky all the time, but it's good.
Once in a while, yeah. Mm-hmm. I like it. I dig it. I'm a big old-fashioned guy, and this is a kind of a treat because I also am a heavy margarita drinker. I mean, not from an alcoholism standpoint,
Chase travels, he goes to Margaritaville.
I own Margaritaville stock. Okay. Coming out with that blender 2.0 soon. Yeah. But anyway, we're here. We brought you on because we wanted to learn a little bit more about being a content creator, which you have been pursuing over like 4 years now, right?
It's been three
full years. And so I guess we can start from like the genesis of all this. So like, tell us a little bit about, I don't know, how you got started, or rather more directly, like what inspired you to start creating travel content, which is your niche, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when did you realize that this could become a full-time career?
Yeah, so it all started when I bought a camera finally, because I was obsessed with taking photos on my phone. But I
can vouch for that.
Yes, you can. With my tripod, I would just set up the tripod with the phone, and we traveled so much. I've always been obsessed with traveling, and we both have, throughout our relationship, kind of prioritized it. but finally, I could afford a camera after I started my real job. And then I got really into it, and I needed somewhere to post my photos. So I started an Instagram. And then I also had all of these Google Docs of itineraries from over the years. So I started posting those, and then I started gaining traction. And I was like, oh, I feel like this could be something. And then I realized that consistency is like super important to grow. So I was like, let's just try being consistent for 6 months and see what happens. And then we pretty much just started growing and never stopped.
So you made the leap from iPhone to professional camera.
Mm-hmm.
What is that like in terms of, you know, when somebody holds one of those big bulky cameras in their hand, it's got all these little knobs and settings. It seems a little intimidating compared to like an iPhone where you just click the button.
Right.
So like, how did you learn how to adapt to that new
equipment? So I watched a lot of YouTube videos, but honestly, the best thing is just practicing and doing it. And I actually feel like I had a little advantage because I graduated as an optometrist, and the eye and a camera lens are very similar optically. So, you know, the pupil is basically like the aperture of the camera. So I kind of understood that part because I used to tutor optics and learned it and everything. But it's mostly just practice and experience. And soon it just becomes like second nature. Like I'll just switch the knobs super fast. But at the beginning, we made a lot of mistakes. A lot. For the six months to the first probably year of owning a camera, all of our pictures were horrible.
Mm. Like, that was mainly
looking back at them, they're trash.
It was because at the very start, you just shoot on auto because you don't know yet, right?
Yeah.
You start trying to shoot on manual to use the different settings to get used to it. But a lot of the times you're like, I need to get a shot of this thing that's happening, and you don't have time to go through the settings. Mm-hmm. Whereas someone who's more experienced can go and quickly like change that to how they need to. There's even presets and stuff that you can use. So we used auto, and then when we would do manual, it'd be like, I remember we were in Crested Butte and there were these wild, they weren't really wild horses.
Yeah.
They're kind of like they just kind of roam around, but they're part of a farm. And we thought it was so cool. So Sarah's over here taking photos and we're like, oh, that was so awesome. And then after we go look back at it and realize that the shutter was a little bit too low. So they were all blurry.
Every single one.
Yeah. Oh, no. Did you at least have some backup iPhone photos to fall back on?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
So it was like, now it's kind of cool because we just went to Alaska over the summer and I rented a 400 millimeter lens for the first time. And I did wildlife photography for the first time. And I think the pictures actually turned out really good. So it's just cool to see how far we've come.
Oh, yeah.
So that's like a super zoom lens. Is that what that is basically? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
600 is like the most.
Really? Okay.
I don't know if it's actually the most, but
it would be the most popular, I think, for
wildlife photographers. Yeah. I probably could have used a 600, but a 400, I was still able to get pretty good photos.
And the 600, it's like, that's the lens that's like this big.
Yeah.
And you're carrying like a suitcase just for that thing, you know?
That's the stuff that you see all the sports photographers on the sideline holding to get those super up close shots, right? Yeah. Those are massive.
And I think people don't realize, like, they'll see a photo of a bear and be like, wow, that's a cool photo. But I'm, like, literally hanging out the side of a bus, like, taking this photo in, like, 1 second while the bus is moving or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you just have to be so quick with the settings and everything.
Or you're on a boat.
I mean, you know,
too. Or you're on a boat and there's a whale jumping. Exactly. And you're, like, trying to stay steady and there's other people around and you're trying to make sure you get that shot.
Yes, like, I was running around the boat like a crazy person.
Yeah, what things are you doing to get a steady, focused, non blurry photo when you are in that situation
it's
where the boat's
the
moving
shutter,
the shutter
the shutter just has
just
to
really
be
quick
really high but then also just capturing it at the right moment and making sure the focus is on so there's a lot of other things that go into it, but that's the main thing.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And so you rented versus buying, is that just because those things are like incredibly expensive?
And just because we don't do wildlife that much, so I wanted to test it out and see.
And so are you convinced now?
Yeah, I think I want the 600 though, so
But we probably won't get it anytime soon until
safari.
maybe, but so like renting probably, because those lenses are like $13,000.
No, not all of them. Some of them are like $2,000 to $3,000.
Sure, the cheaper brands.
But you want something that's like probably a little bit better.
I don't think that I need the best of the best for what I do.
What makes it so much better? Like one of those Sony 600 lenses.
That's like a prime lens versus like a telephoto lens with multiple focal lengths. And the quality is not going to be as perfect. But for me, just posting on Instagram mostly. And like
not going in Nat Geo, right?
No, and I can blow up the photos and they're still going to look good. Like some wildlife photographers are extremely, you know, like crazy a little.
Yeah,
and
all right.
Just every pixel to be super crisp.
So now I can adjust our finances a little bit. I have a lot of people who tell me like, hey Miles, can you talk to my husband and like try to get him to be more happy about taking photos with me and stuff like that. And Sarah was very much all the time, way back when, like when we were in high school and then when we were in college, it was like everywhere we went, she liked taking photos. And you've told me a lot of times, like what's your motivation really behind taking photos is a lot about, is about remembering, having those memories, because for you have a harder time thinking back and visualizing things that happened in the past. And I think that people say that they can do that, and I can do that, for instance, but I can't do that with the moments I just don't remember. But if I have an album to go back to and just kind of scroll through, then I'll remember these things in my past where I'm like, oh my gosh, I remember that trip we went on, or I remember like when we were with our family. And so that to me kind of opened up why I should be more open to taking photos with you. And it became more interesting for me to do it because now we had like this album of our whole life. And then as we grew and you taught me how it's more of a challenge for getting certain shots, that's when it became more interesting for me. And it was very natural for Sarah. Like this is why it's a really good fit for her, is because she'll look in the camera and get a shot that she really likes. Like she frames it well. So it's arguably a good photo. And then I will go and, or used to, I'm a little bit better now, but I'll go and just take the photo and it'll be like, why did you cut off the feet? Or why did you cut like half the legs or something weird? Or just like that random tree. And For me, once I understood that, like the things to look for, then it became more exciting.
Yeah.
What made you understand some of those concepts of like how to frame properly and what looks good?
I think that does like come more naturally to me than Miles, and like I'm assuming maybe other people, like I just saw everybody kind of saw things like that. Whereas like I'm not always thinking like about, oh, the rule of thirds, like it, I just like automatically do it kind of, because I just automatically know that it looks good. Whereas Miles like has to have the grid and like line it up. And
where does that come from, you think?
I don't know. My mom's an artist, so maybe her like just naturally, I don't know. Honestly.
Yeah, I think you could flip the question back to you, right? Because you're an artist as well. You do graphic design, among other things. So for you, it's like I could never do the job you've done in the, like in the past till now, because I don't look at things like, I can't match things well. I even have a hard time matching my clothes. And so there's just something in my brain that like, you could teach me these colors look good together. And then I'll know that those two colors look together or these three colors look together, but I won't, like, I can't, you can't tell me this is why color looks good together, and I still won't put it together. Yeah. So I think it's kind of like, you know, what do you attribute that to?
Yeah, I think some people, it comes naturally a little bit more. They sort of an eye for things of that nature. And it can be learned, I think.
Yeah, also looking at photos, like I really like looking at photos. So just learning from other people stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, and some people may never get it, and that's okay. I mean, that's just not what you're meant to do, or, you know, and you may try and try and try, but it just like, it may not just, you know, be cut out for that type of thing. Yeah. And that's okay.
And Miles is actually really good now. Like, he'll just frame stuff on his own, and it's really great. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I definitely don't think it comes as naturally to you, but you're great at learning it. So I do think it can be taught.
Sure.
As well, but not to everybody.
So let's go back a little bit to the beginning, how we started here. And you mentioned consistency is key. And so what does that look like when you're first starting out? Like, how much time do you dedicate weekly, daily, to sort of really finding your way through the, you know, the Instagram of things and posting and engaging? What does that look like?
So at the beginning, it took me a lot shorter to make the content because it was bad, honestly, like compared to now, where now it takes me a lot longer to make one reel, for example. But back then, I think I posted every single day for probably like almost a year without like any kind of return. So
that seems like a lot of well, you say it's easy to like, do it, to but make, to yeah. what about the actual posting and engaging?
Right, yeah, so it's time consuming. I think probably I was spending like 2 hours a day minimum. Like at the very beginning, you have to post, and then you also, how you grow is engage with other people in your niche, which is really cool because I have friends now that we connected when we were under 5,000 followers, and we just met Natty, for example, at a Chevrolet event, and she has like 400 something now, and like we're both doing this full time. So it's, you can actually form genuine connections that way. But yeah, so it's like kind of fun, but yeah, that is also a lot of time. So you have to engage, comment on other people's posts. And then I would say you, at the beginning, probably for the first 6 months, I didn't try to pitch any brands, but then I started pitching brands and just trying to like network. And it's kind of just like fake it till you make it. Like, hi, we're Sarah and Miles. We're travel creators. Like, what, we can do this for you. I would just email random people like every day. And I still do that. And that's how we've gotten some of our biggest, coolest opportunities. So now I'm like, you might as well just ask.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it is time consuming. Is no. Yeah. But it is time consuming. So probably like 2 to 3 hours a day, I would say. But I think it helped that I was gaining traction over time. Like, I could see that. So that was motivating. But I think a lot of creators, like even friends that I have, like it can be super discouraging when your stuff is like not being shown to anyone. And there's so many ebbs and flows. Like, 1 week, all your posts are going to do great. The next week, they're all going to do horrible. And like, a lot of people just give up. But like, you just have to keep going.
You have to endure through it.
Yes.
So when what was your first big break when it comes to working with brands or tourism boards? When did you go, oh wow, like I can do this.
Yeah, I definitely think it was when we got paid to travel for the first time. And it was like the first time we had worked with like one tiny brand before that, but our first real big brand deal, we got paid to go to Bend, Oregon. And
so exciting.
It was so exciting. Like I remember being in the airport and I was like, I just can't believe we're getting paid to do this. Yeah. Like we're getting paid to go do a trip that we would normally do. So they pay like all expenses, flights and hotel, food, all of that. And then they also pay us on top of that. So it was just like so crazy. And it still is, but it's like more normal now.
And that's probably what motivated you even more,
yeah,
because
definitely.
It was like, okay, now you know, you knew you could grow,
yeah,
and make something out of it. And you had heard from other people, mm-hmm, that you can actually make money doing this.
Yeah.
And then to prove it to yourself and, yeah, me, it was like, oh wow, this thing that we would have paid money to go do, someone will pay us to go, mm-hmm, do. And so, like, I think for that, we were like, okay, we're going to do this, but we're all going to make sure that it's always fun. It's never going to be work,
yeah,
which is not totally true. It's like a lot of work,
yeah,
but it's still really, really fun. So I feel like when that came, that's why I feel like you say it's the big break, because,
yeah,
it was like, whoa, this is crazy that,
yeah,
someone's doing this.
And it means like other people might too. Mm-hmm. And that was actually really cool because I pitched that. So they didn't reach out to us or anything. And then we made money and were able to do that from an opportunity that like I created. So I was like, oh, what else can we do?
How is like the Instagram algorithm sort of, and understanding sort of how Instagram works, mm-hmm, how have you used that? Is that a core strategy to growing your audience?
Yeah.
And
for
what,
sure,
kind of tips can you give to people?
Yeah. So there's basically, you know, some formulas that you have to have a good hook, which is like the first 2 to 3 seconds of the video. And there's like little tricks that you can do. I've kind of learned at the beginning, I did a lot of like just 7 second, like trending music reels, because that was what was doing well at the time. Mm-hmm. Now that does not do well at all for me. So it's like constantly evolving, and it is a bit different for every audience. So like some people still just do that and it does great. But now my audience like really likes my informative voiceovers and like the longer videos that take longer to make. But you just like have to constantly be experimenting and evolving. So just trying new things all the time is kind of the key to success, and not copying other people, because a lot of people do that. And like people grow huge followings from doing that. But I think like from what we've heard from brands over and over, like they're not necessarily looking for like the greatest reach. They're just looking for like original creative content, because they can always put ad spend behind it and, mm-hmm, probably have a better ROI that way. Whereas like paying a creator with like really big reach that is like, maybe it'll work out, maybe it won't.
So that's a good thing to bring up, you know, like what are brands looking for specifically,
yeah,
when they come to like collaborate with you?
Yeah, it's really variable.
Yeah.
It on every deal is different, but generally, so I'll just think back like on our most recent ones, like posting on our page, of course. But some deals don't involve posting on our page at all. And they're just us making videos for the brand to then put ad spend behind and like boost.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something called whitelisting, which is where they boost it from our account. So it looks like we're posting it, mm-hmm, but we're not. The brand is posting it. And you can charge more for that, because they're using your likeness and everything. And then there's just like paid usage that they can boost it from the brand's account.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll pay for that. UGC, that's user generated content, is a big one, because we just had a call with like a creator manager, and he was like, brands are noticing like creators' content performs way better than like any other professional branded ads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like the ROI is so much better.
Mm-hmm.
Do
you think that's because audiences buy more into the idea that this is maybe a like less of a marketing pitch and,
yeah,
more of a personal thing?
I think so.
Probably.
Well, also, and creators know the kind of videos that get views as,
mm-hmm,
well. Like we all have experience making those type of viral videos and things. So it's not, you know, every person who works for a brand knows how to do that. So I think that's why,
mm-hmm,
as well. And then other ways that we can work with brands, am I missing? Tourism board collaborations are a big one, where they'll just pay us to come to a destination. Did I miss anything?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, it's a lot about...
Oh, also photography licensing, right. too. They'll okay. pay for our using our images for a certain length of time.
Yeah, and that, sometimes it'll be social media related, or they mm-hmm. might just want content to put in their newsletters or on their website or yeah. whatever it is. So there's lots of different types.
Exclusivity is a big one, too, that you can get paid because a lot of brands want exclusivity, which means, like, you can't work with any other brands in that category, and mm-hmm. then that's expensive for them.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So, gotcha.
And as far as I think, like, what they're wanting kind of varies, too, like, out of that. Like, mm-hmm. What's their ROI look like? And sometimes it's like, yeah, they want to make some sales maybe, but it's more about the brand recognition. So they might work with a lot of different people just to kind of like do the thing where it's like Starbucks or Gucci or whoever puts a store on a corner, not necessarily because it's going to be profitable, but because people will recognize it and they'll know, like, I can get Starbucks anywhere, or I can get, like, I'll go to the Gucci store and no one else will be there because it's so exclusive or whatever, right? And so they want that. And then there's some where it's like, it's going to be Prime Day, or it's going to be Black Friday or Christmas, and we want kind of like direct sales. And so mm-hmm. they'll say, you know, use this code or something, because that usually people, when they see get something off, they'll use it. So that's a lot of the two types of things they're looking for when we're posting specifically.
And so I think my next question for you is sort of harkens back to, you know, the idea of like personal interest and, you know, making money.
Yeah.
So how do you balance basically like what you're interested in versus like what you're getting paid to do?
Mm-hmm.
What's yeah. that balance like? Because, you know, I think, and I think a lot of people would be interested in hearing the answer to this, because, you know, there is a bit of like selling yourself
yeah.
involved in this,
mm-hmm.
and that can get a little sticky mm-hmm. Sometimes. And so like, how do you balance that?
Yeah. I think like it's good that naturally I usually see like the value in a lot of things, and I'm like a very optimistic and like positive person. So I'm like usually excited about a lot of different things. But yeah, I think especially with travel, we really do have to balance like personal and work trips. Like last year we did like a lot of work trips and maybe just like one personal trip. And I felt like that was just too much, and I was feeling like really burnt out. And like the reason I'm doing this is because I love it. And when it starts, something I love starts to feel like work and I don't want to pick up my camera, like that's a sign that I should not, you know, I need to take a break. So now this year I've incorporated a lot more personal trips, and I think that's been really positive.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as brands, like we'll just deny stuff that isn't aligned with us.
Okay.
You know, like we've had jerky or like meat, like we mm. lost out on like a pretty big deal because they wanted us to promote Ribfest somewhere.
Yeah.
So like we're just not gonna do that.
And for those who don't know, yeah. they are vegetarians,
yeah.
so that would go against yeah. their values.
Yeah. Yeah, our audience would be like, I mean, number one, yeah, against our, like we don't want to eat meat, so yeah. it'd be weird for us to be like, we'll just eat meat so we can get paid, and then our audience would be like, you guys, why are you guys eating meat?
Yeah.
It would be so inauthentic too.
Yeah.
And that's a really important thing to not let our audience think that we're being
yeah.
inauthentic.
Like if Southwest Air reached out and wanted to pay us a lot, I would just say no, cause I hate them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You've
yeah,
had some
just, like,
tricky experiences
yeah,
with them.
But I mean, yeah, I'm sure they're fine, but yeah. So it's just, it wouldn't be authentic. Like we are yeah. always balancing that. So yeah.
And so like, you know, at the heart of this is sort of like, you know, the it kind of goes back to the genesis. This is something you love to do, but on the outside of it, it is more or less a marketing business,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So with every good business, there's, you know, core values.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have like a core values, and like how do you use those to integrate into like some of these brand deals?
Yeah, so we for a while for tourism boards, we were doing like a lot of sustainable and responsible recreation campaigns, because mm-hmm. that was something we were really passionate about. So we would promote like going, and we would knowing that, so it's like I've chosen with our whole account, basically if I posted the locations of you know, hidden gem hikes that are really beautiful, like that stuff always is going to go viral. And like, I would probably grow a lot and make, get a lot more brands interested, but I'm not going to build my business off of that. So, a lot of people do though. So I never share sensitive locations. And I always share like leave no trace information with everything that I share. And we specifically have sought out, campaigns that also are aligned with that. So like with Kauai, for example, like that was an unpaid one that we did, but we wanted to do it because it was like a really good message to support Hawaii, because no one follows the rules there, and they don't need more tourists, they just need like respectful tourists. So I think like just always keeping that in mind, not just with brand deals but with our page, has been something that we've always done. Because I know how to make viral videos, but like I'm not gonna just make viral videos to like, you know, sacrifice my values, if that makes sense.
So you're not what's that guy's name on YouTube, Mr. Beast?
Yeah, like the controversial stuff that was viral.
Yeah. I feel like he's I don't know if you guys agree with this, but in my opinion, I feel like that's somebody who just does it for the
views. I don't watch like,
the numbers.
Sure, yeah.
For
stuff.
Sure, yeah. And there's a lot of.
I'm not super familiar with his videos, but like I know that he. It's just like about keeping attention and the craziest things that you can think of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially for how big he is now, he's got to keep it all going.
Oh, sure. Right. Yeah, the engine can't stop.
Yeah,
you got to keep going.
But there's other things like in our contracts that we work with brands. So first off, like Sarah said, we'll just tell brands that we don't think are a fit, that we just don't see how we like. It's not good for them either if we don't use the product. If we don't think we would use the product, we're not going to promote it well. If they want UGC or something just for them, just basically for an ad for them to run, you know, that's one thing. But then, like in contracts, we can put in there. We can terminate this contract if you send something to us and we actually don't like this product. And so that keeps us from having to commit to something that we really don't truly believe in.
That makes sense. Yeah. And what's the most, you said Kauai, that was one that you did for, you know, pro bono basically. Right. And, that was sort of close to your values. What's another brand deal that you can sort of shout out that really aligns with what you guys are trying to do?
I think Glacier also. We worked with the Glacier County Tourism Board.
Okay.
And they, Glacier National Park is like one of the most popular parks in the U.S. during the summer. So they never work with people, but we had gone in May and we fell in love with it and already had a trip planned in the summer. And we were like, well, what if we just do exclusively like leave no trace information and just promote that information, not like what hikes there are and things like that. So we didn't really post anything about the hikes, even though that probably would have gone viral. We just posted like how you can prepare for your trip. You need to carry bear spray and all of that information. So I feel like that is the kind of stuff that we really like doing.
That's awesome.
Like using our platform for, you know, knowledge and for a good cause.
Some good stuff. Yeah. Not just making money. Yeah. I can appreciate that. But there's always going to be somebody online with any social media. And I think that's a good segue into asking, like, you know, there's a lot of good that comes out of social media, and there's some not so nice things that can come from social media. And that includes people who are just out to ruin your day or point out flaws or, you know, sort of exploit you in a negative way. And so I'm sure you've had to deal with that, and that cannot be easy to do. So how have you been able to navigate that and sort of combat some of that negativity?
Yeah. Like trolls specifically?
Sure. Let's start there.
I feel like I have gotten actually better just over time. Because also usually it's not a personal attack, besides someone saying they don't like my voice, which does not bother me at all anymore. But they are usually just saying like we ruined Colorado or something. If we, you know, I know that we're not posting sensitive locations, and even if we post a state, they'll like just Colorado, they'll just say that. So I don't take it personally. So it usually doesn't bother me. There's a couple of things that people say that bother me, which is like, I'm not a real hiker is like one that I get a lot. because like I do curl my hair for hikes, I think. And like,
and do your makeup. And
yeah. So like, and I think that there was one trek that I posted where like we didn't backpack, but we carried day packs and all of our camera gear and stayed at like little huts. and people are like, oh, you're not a real hiker because you didn't backpack. Like, people judge others for how they spend time outdoors, which is like just very weird to me. Like,
I mean, you guys aren't doing the show alone or like Lone Survivor or anything.
Yeah, so like I'm just trying to have fun. Like, yeah. I'm not trying to be like the most hardcore about anything.
Yeah, there's definitely that niche for sure. Yeah. Like the survivalist group. So those are like, group. Yeah.
And then there's like, I remember one guy was like, she looks like she couldn't hike farther than Starbucks or something. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, from the car to the Starbucks.
And then when you click on their profile, they always have like daughters and like they're, yeah. Or wives. And I'm like, that's so weird.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's sad.
But honestly, like they don't bother me very much. It's just like maybe once like every month or two, there's one that gets me.
So you've been able to sort of look through the BS and sort of come to a conclusion that like, you know, it's not personal. That's just the way some people are like
the
that.
Trolls are not really a big deal. Yeah. I do struggle a lot. Like I think this job is very hard on your mental health, but not because of that. I think it's because like, you're constantly pitching yourself and getting rejected like all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, so just like, it's not really normal to like be rejected like that many times, like per week. So that can like, if you know, I'm pitching or brands will reach out and then they essentially reach out to like a bunch of creators and then they'll, or PR companies do, and then they'll pitch you to the brand.
Yeah.
And then you're either chosen or you're not. Mm-hmm. So like some weeks, like we'll get a lot of deals, and other weeks like I'm getting rejected like 5 times in 1 week, and that is probably like my biggest struggle.
Yeah,
just because like I think anybody would struggle with that. Mm-hmm. But you're like, my content sucks, like I'm doing horrible.
Yeah, it's not even about like, oh, I really wanted to work with this or it was a lot of money.
Just,
it's
like,
just
feeling like you're
like you're not good because they didn't want to work with you. Why didn't they want to work with you?
But then other like, but I always remind myself like, sometimes I do ask for feedback, like, why weren't we chosen? And sometimes it's like, oh, you don't have a Gen Z audience. Like, we really have, like, no Gen Z audience. So it could be nothing, like, with our content. I just take everything really personal since, I think that's natural.
I think somebody told me this the other week, but it was Jason Bateman, the actor, said this, I think, brilliantly, is that, like, he gets fired 3 to 4 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after he shoots a movie or TV show, after he's done, he gets fired.
Yeah.
And so it's about being able to, or rejected, right?
Yeah.
And so being able to keep moving on and constantly seek new work.
And then it's like but then you have to pitch yourself like in an hour after you got rejected. And it's like hard to like feel confident about that. But I think that's just the nature of it. And then you see like, on Instagram, the other creators who got chosen over you because they're your friends most likely.
Yeah.
So that has been like probably my biggest struggle with it all.
You always feel your best when you don't need the work, right?
Yeah.
Like you're like, I'm awesome because I have all this work to do.
Well,
and then when you need work, you're like, nobody wants to work with me. Yeah.
And I think like the nature of it is it's so inconsistent too. Mm-hmm. Like some months are like really great and then other months are not. And it's like,
just, well, you can hold solidarity and companionship with other professions that do this, right? Yeah. Like real estate's a very big one,
and
right?
Zach, I've heard him say so many times.
Always chasing the next thing.
It's just like the nature of self-employment.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you really have to have that entrepreneurship mindset to really persevere because there's going to be low points and high points, right? And you have to kind of ride both an equal kind of mindset.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's definitely been a struggle, but I think it's just part of it. And I think I'm getting better with it.
Yeah,
I just have like a bi-weekly mental breakdown.
Yeah, but
so what picks you back up though?
Just literally just sleeping and like waking
up
the
just
next day.
And
I'm like,
and me,
and Miles.
Wow,
and Miles.
You and me out like
your rock,
like,
right?
I think,
your kick,
funny because,
Mr. Kick.
My old job, like, if I miss something, like someone could die. Like the stakes are not high for this job, but it's like still harder on your mental health than like being an eye doctor, in my opinion.
Mm.
Just because like the nature of like you are the brand and like it's your work. Like
whereas
like in a career like that, you have like your separation of personal versus your career, and you don't really have that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people look in at people doing content creation or similar types of jobs, and it seems like very good. Like you're just posting things online and going on trips or for like lifestyle influencers, like don't even have to leave home. You just get sent products and you put makeup on and then you post about it. And it's like all these things around that you learned years ago at this point, that you would have to do on top of that that you didn't really think about, like being your own manager, your own salesperson, a marketer, like an almost like an attorney, right? Like going through contracts and a finance person and understanding all those things, like running a, like being HR for your business, running payroll, taxes, all those things are what you have to do. And it's so much, it's like probably what 70% of your job is doing those things.
Yeah, like
or
I
what
just,
do you think?
I think, I don't know about the percentage. I think it changes depending on what we have going on, but I think I'm actually meeting with a manager tomorrow because I'm thinking about hiring a manager. Like you give them 20% and they just take over your emails basically, just to see if I would like it, because I just feel like I waste a lot of time just like back and forth emails, and then it takes away my energy to create. And that's like what I mainly want to do.
Sort of like the non-fun stuff.
Like the admin stuff.
Admin stuff.
A lot of people.
And there's so many back and forth emails with brands. Yeah. There's a lot of negotiating. That's another thing. Like not only are you getting rejected, but you're negotiating like all the time.
So let's get into that. Let's, I mean, we talked about from like a macro level, but let's get into the micro level. Give us a sort of, a sneak peek into like the daily things that you're doing. So what is a day, what does a day as a content creator look like for you?
So first I wake up and see if I got any new emails pretty much. And then some of them are urgent to respond to. And some aren't, in my opinion. And then, so I'll spend probably like an hour or so on emails. And then I always post around 10 or 11 because the algorithm doesn't like if you post at random time. So you always have to post around the same time.
Okay.
And you also have to engage usually before and after if you want your post to do really well. Like you can like post and ghost. And sometimes it will still do well, but it will definitely do better usually if you stay around. So there's
like immediately after?
Yeah. Okay. And before. So engaging on other people's posts, and then I'll sometimes I'll have a reel ready to go. I'll usually post like 4 reels a week, 3 to 4, and then one photo post. But sometimes I'm making it that morning if I was too tired the day before. And then I post, and then I'll like engage more, and then I'll respond to more emails. And then I'll like, if I need to create any brand deals or invoice or a lot of, so how a brand deal works, basically they'll reach out to you, you'll negotiate, and then they send, you sign the contract. You have to look over the contract. Then they send a creative brief, and then usually you have to send a creative concept to get approved. Then they approve your concept. Then you shoot the content. Then you submit the content for approval. And then
what is the concept look? Is that a written creative brief?
Yeah, so it can
basically
be anywhere from like a few sentences to like a 10-page PowerPoint.
Yeah,
depending on the brand.
Yeah, like colors and kind of like the vibe that they want,
the
and
mark,
certain
the
wording.
Message. That's another thing where it can be hard to stay authentic sometimes if it's extremely strict and they want you to say like certain words or things like that.
They give you like sort of a framework, parameters of how to operate.
So, I have a partner that we've worked with long term, and they don't meet our rates, but they're a small business and there's no creative brief, and they just let me do whatever I want, and they pay a week later, which is amazing. So I just charge lower rates for them. Usually you get paid net 30 to 90, probably most likely 30 to 60. But
which means, like, for anyone who doesn't know that, once you deliver everything and then send an invoice to them, it's 30 to 60
after
to
that.
90 days after that. So,
so
it's like,
months
you may have started negotiating with them in July. That process may have taken a month. It's now August. You shoot and stuff and you post in September, and then you invoice them sometime in September, and then you get your money in October, November, or December.
That's why I like my one like small business partner, where I just reached out and like a week before she's like, okay, yeah, let's do a reel next week, and then she pays me like a week later. So it's nice to like kind of find those as well, but
those repeat customers.
So, and then today I spent a lot of time deciding on rates for this one project, because I also just always, some days I don't, but sometimes I just go back and forth a lot on what I want to do.
What does that look like? Let's kind of sidetrack into that. How do you determine value?
So I have standard rates that are kind of like my, you know, what I tell brands, but then depending on how strict it seems, and then the timeline, how busy we are is a big one. Like, I'll accept ones that don't meet our rate if we don't have much going on, but if we're really busy with partnerships or travel, then my rates go up.
And how did you get to the rate?
Yeah, so just trial and error, kind of, and talking to other creators. So that's a big one. Talking to other creators, seeing what they're charging, and then just trying, like
seeing what sticks,
what people will pay us. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So kind of being like, okay, I got paid this. I know these people got paid this. So for my next pitch or whatever or negotiation, I'm going to try a little bit higher. And then either they pay that or you negotiate down from there and kind of get that baseline, and then it kind of goes up. Down,
for tourism boards, just because we're tired these days, we'll charge less if they're closer, and then if they're farther, we'll charge more. And then we've gotten some higher deals because we were like, we don't really like want to travel that far, so we're just going to say a high number. And then they're like, okay. And we're like, well, I guess we're going to try to charge that from now on. So it's just all, but I still don't really, like, I go back and forth all the time. And I try not to make like emotional decisions, but
I think that's the part that can make you feel like the almost the imposter syndrome, or like you're not worth what the brand is paying you, even though they've clearly decided that you are worth that, right? And then you kind of feel like, because we aren't the brands, like we're not selling things, so we don't really know how effective it is. We can tell them like, this is your engagement, these are your metrics, people. Especially if it's an affiliate thing, we can know how many people bought things, how, you know, what was spent. But at the end of the day, I feel like, at least for me,
it's hard to measure for even the brands though.
Yeah.
Influencer marketing is very hard to measure in general, even for brands. And a lot of it is, the goal is more brand awareness rather than like direct ROI, because people will see something and then months later buy it, not a day later, you know? And we do work with like a lot of stays, like luxury stays. And I think that, is really, really hard to measure, especially because people aren't booking vacations like immediately, but we'll have like 10,000 saves on a post. And like, obviously some of those people are going to book in the future, you know?
Yeah. Right.
So there's like different ways, but you really can't like measure it any good way.
That must be tough.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's tough for the brands and for the influencers.
Yeah,
like,
right.
But it's just the nature of it.
But it seems like there is, it's got to work somehow, because there's so many brands investing massive amounts of money. Well, and it's like, we'll hear about people who are getting paid way more than we are, right? And not necessarily with even much more engagement. And it's like, okay, if brands are really like spending, then it must be worth it to them. Well, they must be getting something out of it.
I just think about one of my optometry, I used to organize events, like continuing education events for our optometry, and we would pay, or like the organization would pay the speaker $2,000 to come speak to 15 optometrists, because it was a niche audience. Or no, the sponsor, sorry, the sponsor would, not us. We would get sponsored for $2,000 to talk to like 15 optometrists, because it was so valuable for them to be heard by 15 people. So it's like,
for like an hour.
Just imagine a billboard. Like, you can't really measure a billboard. So that's kind of how I think of it.
It's so tricky. I mean, there's no secret formula to it. There's so much complexity to it. You're not putting money in people's pockets to go spend on the brand. You know, you have to really sort of get into the minds of people, and marketing is so weird like that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of risk involved, especially on the people who have the money who are spending for, right?
But it's also like such a small amount for them as a big brand that it's like, I try to think about that too, where it seems like a big amount for us, but it's like nothing to them. And then also like, we'll have people message me, like someone messaged me a year later that they stayed at this luxury stay that we did. That's like $1,600 a night, and like they immediately made their money back with just that one person, you know? So it's like, I think it's definitely worth it for them.
Oh yeah,
influencer marketing is definitely better than any other type of marketing, in my opinion, because not only do you get in front of more like eyes authentically, but you also reach like an audience that trusts you, which is really big. It's like, if your friend told you to get something, you would trust that more than like a billboard.
This is sort of like a little off topic, but are there like companies that are sort of posing as like individual influencers, and they're like it's like a house, like a firm, basically, that, or Like, is that a thing or
I don't think so.
No?
What do you mean?
Have you seen that? I don't know, just like fake influencers.
Oh, no, I'm not.
Especially with AI nowadays.
I do know, like, I did see that article about the AI girl who was making like $200,000 a year.
Oh, really? It was all fake?
From brand deals, yeah. And it was just an AI, and it was some company that did it, yeah. Mm.
But there is, there are companies who own certain accounts. They're usually not like personalities, but it'll be like something of a city or like I-70 things or whatever, right?
Yeah. Barstool has like 100 accounts.
Right.
Yeah, Barstool FSU or, you know, whatever. So they're posting, you know, content that's relevant to that, basically. Yeah.
And that's great for them. It's like a really cheap stream of income because the people they pay to run those accounts probably aren't making as much money as those people could make running their own account.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So they're actually like, they're doing pretty well if they've gotten one of those accounts that do really well.
Hmm. So, you're posting almost every day. You said 4 reels a week, maybe one photo. How do you maintain like a fresh approach? Because that's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just going to quickly do the math in my head. That's 52 weeks. So that's roughly what, 200 reels a year?
Yeah.
So how do you maintain the fresh approach?
Yeah, and
to that?
It's also not only that, but you have to think like, oh, this reel could be seen, like it's probably going to be seen by at least 10,000 to 15,000 people, like on our low end. And then like on the high end, it could go viral. So like, not only are you just like creating, but people are going to see this. So you have to like think about that part.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think I definitely go through periods of burnout where I don't want to make reels. And I've actually gotten a lot better at managing that because I'll repost old reels.
Mm-hmm.
And like viral reels from like 6 months ago, I'll just repost them sometimes if I can't think of anything new. And usually they'll do well again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or I'll go through my old content and think like, okay, how can I make this in a different format? Like maybe I'll do a voiceover or an itinerary style or something. And then like doing just like a fresh take on like old content. So I don't have to like think of a completely new idea.
Gotcha.
And then I also have notes like all over, just like random ideas.
For sure.
Probably more than I
drafts and notes all over, right?
Yeah. So yeah, it definitely can be hard, especially when you're going through a period where you're just like not feeling
creative
like
block.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And recently I'm realizing my struggle is like I'm most productive in the morning and I'm most creative at night, which is like not great for sleep. But
it's not great for me either because I fall asleep early.
Yeah.
But then I guess she gets her work done.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I just have a lot of ideas at night and then, but I don't want to answer any emails, but in the morning I'm like doing emails and things like that.
Why do you think that is?
I have no idea. I wish I knew so I could change it.
To overlap productivity and creativity.
I wish I could just, like the thing about being self-employed is like, you still feel like you have to work 9 to 5.
Yeah.
Just like, I feel guilty if I'm not working during those hours, even though like I'm working outside of those hours too. And those hours like really mean nothing. Like society just came up with them, but yeah.
It's a super weird thing. Like I work 4 days a week for my other job and I sometimes feel guilty on Fridays. Like I am not paid to work on Fridays. It's not that I'm skipping out on Fridays. I don't get paid to work on Fridays, but it's gotten better over time. It's taken a really long time because I've been working like that for a long time, but I would still feel guilty like not being working when other people are.
It's weird. Like when you take paid time off at a corporate job, you kind of have that like, oh, I don't know if I should be doing this.
It just feels weird. Like, but then I'm like trying to enjoy it. Like sometimes I pretend I'm just like a housewife, like at Marshall's during the day and during the week.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it's just weird I still feel like I need to work those hours.
Yeah. And I think, you know, going back to the productivity versus creativity, I think that is two different mindsets though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
for
it
sure.
really is hard to pair those because I think to be, have a good productivity, you sort of have to turn off the creativity a little bit and just be like the execution part. And then the creativity is more of like the brainstorming. So it doesn't live in the same, you know, sphere as the productivity does. So having it separate, I think almost is a better thing because you get the most out of each.
Mm-hmm.
And if you blend them together, maybe you're not yielding as much if you're doing it that way. So there's some upside to that, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. I see that in my other work too. Like I have lots of meetings in the morning, and on days where I don't have meetings, which is super rare now, I grind. Like I'm so focused, I do really well. But then when I have this other type, like meetings are like are working with other people, socializing. Doing my independent work is working on my own, thinking on my own, solving problems on my own. And it's two different types of working. And so when I go from work doing meetings to go to the other thing, it's actually become very difficult for me to switch into that mode. And so mm-hmm. I think that's what you're experiencing,
yeah,
with
sure.
having to do the business things, like work, like planning things, organizing things, doing emails, to sitting and working on your editing and all that.
Yeah, I'm curious how you do it too, because you have to be creative for your job during mm-hmm. work hours, right?
Yeah, I think in the morning, I'm sort of with you on that. I'm most productive because I think you come in with a fresh mindset, and your first thing you do really is respond to emails. Mm-hmm. So I think that just turns that productivity yeah. part of your brain on first. Mm-hmm. You know, and I find also like there's a bit of a lull after lunch that you kind of have to like encourage yourself to yeah. power through a little bit. And I find myself being most creative the last 2 hours of the day, like 3 to 5.
Yeah, okay. I'm not crazy.
And so, and now I'll even be like, I'll stay a little bit later because I'm on a
yeah,
roll
right.
with something.
Yeah,
and
I'll stay like, up till like midnight is the problem.
Yeah. And so you don't want to stop that train
yeah,
because it's
exactly.
so valuable.
And you can't like yeah. reproduce that.
Once
also.
You tap into it, you have to
yeah.
let it just go
yeah.
and you have to follow it. And then when you finally just have at a good stopping point, you're like, okay, pause. I'll
yeah.
pick it up tomorrow. But, to get a little bit more technical, so Reels, that's the moneymaker.
It's
right?
like the biggest for reach, and
reach,
brands
yeah.
all want that. Yeah.
Is that because TikTok came into existence and
yeah.
now that's like the thing?
Right.
Okay.
Short form
and
video,
so
really
when you repost, and I'll get to TikTok in a moment, but when you repost a reel, are you going back and deleting the original reel?
No.
Or are you just keeping
yeah,
it?
So,
yeah.
So usually it would do really the same, like
huh?
viral again. But then Instagram just did like a new, I don't know what it is exactly, an algorithm feature, I guess, where they recognize unoriginal content. So even if it's your own, I've noticed that it doesn't quite go the same amount of viral. It'll still do probably decent, but not the same. So that can also teach you, though, about like what's trending right now, because mm-hmm. maybe the type of videos that were popular a year ago are not popular now. So mm-hmm. it's just like still useful information regardless.
Yeah.
But sometimes I'll change it a little bit. But there was one crazy example. There was a video that I posted, and it was a voiceover about Urei. Mm-hmm. And it got 2 million views the first time. And then I took my voice out and changed the music to like a really popular song, trending audio, and it got 18 million views.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So like the difference between 2 million and 18 for the same video
was the music.
Yeah. Turning my voice off and putting that like trending audio that was really popular. Other than that, it was the exact same. So just like things like that teach you a lot as
yeah.
well. So like I'm always encouraging my friends who are trying to grow, like experiment.
Yeah. yeah. That's sort of always been my thing I tell people is like, just mm-hmm. start doing it. Because
yeah.
you will learn,
right?
But you can't stall analysis by paralysis or paralysis by analysis.
And I do that sometimes. Like I catch myself being like, everything's horrible. I'm not gonna do.
Uh-huh.
Like I overthink it, and then I just have to like get out of that sometimes. But
people have short-term memory.
Yeah.
These days, you know, they forget
for sure.
yeah.
So, TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
Why hasn't that been a focus of your business?
So Instagram is a lot more community focused. So TikTok, mostly your videos are just pushed out to random people. And Instagram, it's like your audience and then also random people. But you really, you know, stories on Instagram are huge. So I have like my little book review story series where I'll just like review recent books that I'm reading. And my audience loves that.
Your
even
snack
though it
reviews.
Has my yeah, I used to do snack reviews. But like that has nothing to do with travel, but it's just like a fun thing that I can connect with my audience on. And so TikTok just doesn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
TikTok is all about like how can you keep someone's attention? Mm. And that's like not really how I want to make content.
It is a bit different in that way. I have noticed.
It's also a younger audience. And like we really, surprisingly, we just have no Gen Z audience. It's all 25 and above.
They
and
don't
like
want to be outdoors.
30% of our audience is above 45 though too. So we have like an older audience. And I do think that's because we post like more luxury stays.
They have more money to spend.
Yeah, which I enjoy because we're getting older too.
Yeah,
sure.
And we'll notice that like she might post a video like, was this worth it, right? Is this place, is this worth X amount per night? Post it on Instagram, post it on TikTok.
Yeah.
And the people on TikTok, there's a lot more people saying, yeah, that does seem worth it if it's my honeymoon or my anniversary or whatever. And then the people on TikTok, you get a lot more comments like, oh my God, I would never pay that much for that, right?
Mm. So it's more like shit posting.
Yeah.
I notice on TikTok there's a lot of random stuff. Mm-hmm.
It's entertainment. I think Instagram is more value and community, and then TikTok's more entertainment.
Yep.
But Instagram is trying to be TikTok, and that's why it's like very annoying because they recently are changing the metrics to have saves and shares used to be the most important, and shares are still important, but watch time is getting really big for them, which is just how TikTok is. Mm-hmm. So that's like pretty annoying.
Yeah. I noticed like even when we started the Instagram for this podcast and I had subscribed to your channel, I got, and I think I accidentally didn't switch over to my personal account. So I was scrolling on Reels. All I was getting was travel content, like travel creator. And I was like, this is really weird. Like, why am I just getting this? And I think Instagram just kind of focuses on those like communities and like interests, where TikTok, you'll get just a random.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of my criticism of TikTok is like, it is like dopamine overload.
For sure. I mean, it's addicting. Like I personally never scroll on Instagram Reels. Like I never watch it, but I watch TikTok sometimes just for fun. But it's like that's just kind of like my like, you know, I'm my mindless activity, and that's just not the kind of content I want to create personally. But I enjoy consuming it.
If it's thought about it, it'd be like Instagram was where I'd go to see my feed and stories and stuff, and then TikTok would be where I want to go just to scroll. Like I'm not going on there to catch up or find out, like see things from my friends or people that I like. It's just like scrolling.
Yeah.
And then YouTube's even more different because they have the whole long form video and now they have shorts.
But I just hope that Instagram doesn't like lose the community aspect by trying to be too much like TikTok because everybody's seen that already. Like our posts used to be shown to a lot more of our followers. Now it's more non-followers and like, that's true across the board for almost all creators. So
has that cut your engagement, but it's upped your views maybe?
I think the views are like consistent around the same, but the engagement is definitely worse.
Right.
And that's like true for everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, and that just sucks. And like to feel like what's the point of having followers if they're not seeing our stuff. Cause it really was like about community, but actually, like Meta invited me to a creator program where I like don't know how I got invited, but I get to attend webinars about like how to increase your engagement and talk to other creators. And I did a few of those and like it feels like they don't even understand their own algorithm.
Yeah.
They'll ask
the people who work at Meta are asking creators
what their experience is.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's so strange. I wonder if it's like, well, you have the development and then you have like that department probably. Yeah. And I wonder how intimate they are in collaborating information.
And that must be, because there was also, we know someone who worked with this group at Meta where Meta was like, we want you to post this type of thing for this many weeks because Meta was like, using that person to experiment
on Facebook
That was Facebook. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was on Facebook to experiment, to find out how like people can grow more and these different things. And so, yeah, I think it's like the guy, the people actually implementing that back end and versus the product people who are like, we don't really know. We just kind of told them what it should do, but there's probably so many variables. Like think about all the different types of content.
Well, and there's
all the different types of people.
They said there's multiple algorithms. Right. Like everyone's audience is different. So there's just like so many factors. But I do need to, like, I think I have maybe a couple of sessions next week where I'm going to bring screenshots of like the weird thing to me is like having posts that have tons of shares and saves and then they don't get shown to anybody. Like, cause that's a value metric that Meta has said, like shares are so important. So like, why wouldn't that be shown to anyone? And then a video that doesn't have a lot of shares is pushed more. So that's like confusing. It used to be a lot, like a year ago, it was a lot more predictable.
Sure.
Now it's like way more unpredictable, I would say.
But there's also factors like things that are relevant, like the hurricane. If you made a video about something related to a hurricane, right? That's going to get more.
Yeah. Meta said that they said that like they'll prioritize, like if Taylor Swift is trending or like Taylor fall, Swift, like all of our fall posts
Johnny
are doing
Depp.
Good. Yeah. Because it's just trending right now. So. Yeah. But if you post fall in the spring, it's not going to do that great.
Yeah,
so.
On Sunday, if you post a football NFL thing, I'm sure that'll get boosted or somehow.
And which makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's sort of weird, the algorithm thing. It's kind of spooky, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, like at one point, do they not understand how it works?
Yeah.
You know?
I think they don't. Even the developers probably don't, too. Like, I guarantee you they can't just come to you and say, they can probably say, like, we would recommend that you post videos between this amount of time to post them at this times of day, for certain things, right? But they can't tell you that you will do the best. Like, there's no de facto thing.
Yeah, so Meta, they said, they were like, there's no hard and fast rules. But, like, some of the creators were asking, because we don't post multiple times a day, but some people do. And they were like, well, how long should we wait in between posting? And they said like at least 2 hours is what we've seen, but there's no hard and fast rule. Like they just take the data from everybody and like that's what they see.
Just the averages.
Then what
that's
was
more user generated, right? Not the algorithm.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like.
So they have no idea what like rules the algorithm follows.
They just know
the metrics that they
that's
get out
so
of
weird
they
because
also, yeah. Oh, sorry. They also said that like 30-second to 60-second reels get the highest engagement, but that's just data that they see. And that they were like, that may not be true for your audience. So like just do like it's all based on your audience. Hmm. And like I know if we posted 30 to 60 seconds, that wouldn't do the best for ours. So yeah.
What are some other things that they've told you that were sort of surprising to you? You're like, oh, that's interesting.
I think mainly just like the fact that there's no hard and fast rules, which I knew anyway.
Because I'm sure a lot of like how the algorithm works is based on what they're receiving. Like the input and the things that people are posting is so widely variable that it changes, right?
Yeah.
Because your stuff isn't the same as it was, you know, 3 years ago when you first started. And that's true for everything. It's just it's like a melting pot of content and how, you know, and so that can change over time, especially with like the different seasons and like election cycles.
Yeah,
and,
for sure. And then like thinking about someone who makes like cooking content versus like travel content, that's just so different. You can't really compare.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that it's just hard to understand. Like there's probably more specific rules in the travel niche, for example, but no one's analyzing just that.
Yeah.
Like they're just analyzing everything as a whole.
You know what bothers me so much is when the description of a post is like the Cybertruck is an electric, all electric vehicle. And it's just like the same thing every, and I've noticed that so, and
really?
That's just my feed.
Wait, really? They just say the same thing.
It's, yeah.
Remember I showed you a video the other day and you went to look at the description it was like the Lexus something.
It has nothing to do with the video.
Yeah. Yeah.
It bothers me a lot because I do want to see, I want like context or subtext to a video.
Yeah.
And you get that in the description, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know as much as anybody. And so that's just gone now.
Thank you.
It's
thank
all
you
for the
views. Reading the captions.
Yeah,
thank you for doing that.
Because people don't do that anymore.
I mean, that's that fast paced doom scrolling, you know, dopamine.
What's really
and quick
funny,
dopamine
though,
thing.
Is like if you tell people, like you've probably heard of call to actions. Like
If
you tell people to do something, right?
Yeah.
But it's so funny to see how it works. Like if I watch this video or something, like I think I did one for snowboarding, like watch my husband hype up my average snowboarding, and like the watch time was so much higher just because I told people to watch, or like I'll tell people to save and they do. It's just like crazy.
It's interesting. It's like somebody had made a video about that. It was like when you say something is out now, like, oh, go watch it, it's out now, and it's like, well, that's not good enough. You need to like have some sort of like value added into it. It can't just be like a announcement post that like this is out now, go see it. It's like, why would they care beyond just like seeing it? This immediately they're gonna scroll past that and forget
about
it.
That's like one thing I'm always thinking is like, I think I've learned a lot about marketing and like what appeals to the masses. But like the more general you can be about something, like the more specific you are, like less people can relate to that. So you have to make things like as general as possible and tell people why they should care about it in like terms that they can relate to.
But it's all about the hook, like in the first half second that they're watching your video, right? Like to your point, it's like you have to be like, you have to really catch them, like really want, make them want to keep watching your video. And like we've talked about this, we talked about this a lot. Like I'll send videos to Sarah and be like, I watched this video because they said this thing in the beginning. And it could be something like something we've talked about. I died on this trail, right? Like you didn't really die on it, but people are like, whoa, that's extreme. Like how,
I'm trying to get better at storytelling. Cause I'm just like not, some people are just naturally good at it and I'm just not, but I'm trying to test that out and see if it does better. And I think it does when I actually put effort into how I tell the story.
Oh, absolutely.
Like putting the conflict first or like the end first or whatever. And then
the hook.
Yeah. But yeah, like saying, this is the best hike in Colorado versus this is the best hike in Rocky Mountain. Probably Colorado is going to do better because more people know what that is, you know? So I think that making things as general as possible is good if you're trying to reach a lot of people, but.
That makes sense. So the industry is changing. Algorithms can change, trends can change. How are you staying on top of that? Are you just monitoring what's doing well? Are you you're talking to other influencers?
Yeah, and I mean, the funny thing is I don't watch reels and like, so I don't do it that way. I kind of just experiment with my own content and see what's doing the best. And then I test things. And that's pretty much it.
And, talk about something I think that's like very topical, which is AI. Like how do you, are you leveraging that to help your business in any way? And like, what advice can you give other creators to help leverage AI to help you?
Yeah.
Stop I using always say it for chat your descriptions. GPT.
Yeah. Like I always say ChatGPT is my only coworker. ChatGPT and Yoshi.
Whoa.
And Miles. But
oh, wow.
During the day.
You're the
sidekick. I think I was fired.
But, no, ChatGPT, I honestly mostly write for or use for writing emails. That's really helpful. And then I think like they're probably using it too. And then ChatGPT is just like talking to itself. But I don't really get content ideas from ChatGPT, to be honest. Like, I think that if you're having, if you're really struggling that hard to like come up with the creative stuff, like it may not be right for you. Like that's what I enjoy. And I think like just trying, if you're just copying so many creators and they really do build businesses and, you know, a lot of followers off of just copying other people. And we've had our stuff copied a lot in the past, but like, is that even fun for you? Like some people just want to make money, I guess.
Of course. Yeah,
but
yeah.
That's like, I don't know. Like it's fun to kind of create new ideas and come up with things.
I mean, a lot of people work because they need money, not because it's fun.
Right.
And like, this is a form of work.
That's true. For sure. That's true.
So, and something I certainly have to cope with, a little bit when I was mostly a graphic designer, I'm less that nowadays, but, I can see that industry changing a lot, with image generation, video generation. And so how do you see that affecting the industry that you work in, specifically the niche of travel, like AI generated content, specifically for nature photos is becoming almost uncanny.
For sure.
Yeah.
I think, in the last year and a half, I would say relatable, authentic content has been outperforming every other kind of content. And it's because you can't replicate that with AI. So that's how it's shown up the most. Like there are some amazing photographers who, you know, I don't know if they're making that much money. Like I think the people who post like their iPhone photos of them, you know, they're probably doing the best because they have that audience that is trusting them and they're following them for them. And you can't like replicate a whole person on AI. So I think that that's why probably we're seeing that shift, and it's only going to get more and more.
Yeah. Yeah, because I could, and to play a little bit of like devil's advocate, I could see somebody overseas basically emulating a person and generating content hourly.
Yeah.
And basically...
No, there's an app. There's an app that is paying creators to promote it. And I'm like, oh, that seems like a great idea because it'll take your voice and make a video with it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you can't distinguish it. And sometimes you're just too tired to make a voiceover or like make content. So it would be nice as a tool, but it's also like, I don't know, it's just weird.
But it makes the voiceover for you.
And
you don't give it a script.
It sounds so real.
You don't give it a script.
No, you can, I think, but it will also just generate its own.
Yeah.
I forgot what it's called, like in video or something. So
yeah, there's tons of
but
those.
But I think that's why like the more authentic your content is and the more that people can, you know, the farther away it gets from being replicable is like.
Yeah, it's weird because I feel like sometimes, and I think some people fall for this, but you've started to see really, really cute photos of animals, like baby bunnies and squirrels and stuff. And you're like, oh, this actually looks fake.
Yeah.
And it's kind of...
You can't really tell.
It's not very appealing. It's kind of like when Alexa and Siri and whatever Google's is kind of like started sounding too real.
Yeah.
And you were like...
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't... It feels weird. And I feel like some of that content that AI is creating, you look at it and you're like, this doesn't... Like, it's nice looking. It's appealing. Yeah. But it doesn't, I don't get that much from it.
Well, what's funny, like just analyzing my own content is in the last month, the carousel, the photos that have done the best, I think they reached like 130,000 people, is like me and three other girls just like in front of fall leaves on an iPhone. Mm-hmm. Like, whereas me and Miles posted like our really pretty photos that we took and like that just did the best.
Yeah.
So yeah. And it's just sending it to all these random people. So,
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, I certainly don't want the AI topic to dominate the conversation because we talk about this a lot on the podcast because it is so we're in this weird moment.
It's why things are shifting with the whole like what people like on Instagram. Like if you think 5 years ago people liked the aesthetic content where everything was perfect, like that does not do well anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like maybe for those people who had that audience back then already, but now
it's kind of dead.
Yeah.
And I could see a future where 80% of the content you see is AI generated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Where like it's so good, it emulates the authenticity you're talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that sort of scares me a little bit.
For sure.
Because
I hope that we're far away enough from that though, because like you could definitely still tell now.
Yeah. And I've seen some pretty compelling
pictures.
Specifically,
100%, but
the videos
still
for sure.
Hard,
the videos.
I think. Yeah.
But if you look at like what was 2 years ago versus what now, it's sort of startling.
Well, what's
funny
too is like my stories, some like also analyzing what stories do well is like when I just like ramble in blocks of text, like AI is not going to do that.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm very casual.
Unless
like,
it studies your profile and then emulates it, you
but
know?
Right now at least.
Right.
And
yeah.
I think that's why those do well.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's not something that
it's imperfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think like once it gets to the point where it realizes it doesn't need to make like the most beautiful image or the most beautiful video, that's when it'll get there. Because when you see someone post something that they over edited, like a sunset photo, and they over edited the glow from the sunset, you can see it. You're like, this doesn't really look good. And I feel like, they think it makes it look better, but it kind of looks unrealistic. You're like, it would never look like that. I know it would never look like that. And I think AI sometimes will create those like over the top photos. So when it gets better at kind of understanding what it should really look like if it creates a photo of something in Yosemite National Park, there's so many photos of Yosemite National Park. People know what it looks like. People visit it all the time, right? So if it posts something that just is like, that's I know that place, it's not going to look like that. But when it understands what it should look like, that's when like, it's like, yeah, why take your own photo,
I
guess.
Yeah. It's weird. So you were and still are an optometrist. And you recently, within the last year, decided to go full-time into content creation. And so what advice can you give other people who have sort of gotten their feet wet into content creation and they're at that level in this where they can now take that risky step into doing it full time?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, it depends how risk averse you are, I guess, because I don't think that I mean, just for me, I'm very, very risk averse. So I have a lot of anxiety about, you know, where is the next paycheck coming from, even though I had this whole year pretty much mapped out where even if I got no work, we would be fine. So I think like having a husband who has a stable job, like we've decided like we don't want him to do this as well, because I think that's when it becomes like very much pressure to make your passion and everything that you're doing work and like not turn down those deals.
Yep.
So I would say like setting, like a lot of people just quit when they don't, aren't even making money, to just try to make it work. And I would say like at least have like 3 to 6 months saved where even if it's fine, if you make no money for those 3 to 6 months, you're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm. Or you're going to be very focused on the fact that you're not making money.
Right, right.
And that's going to
bring
you down.
I mean, maybe some people aren't like me, but I think a lot of people probably are.
I think you'd be surprised. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just like, it's just a hustle and you have to be prepared for that. And that's why a lot of people try to sell it as like the dream life. And like, yeah, it is. Like, I love it so much and I would not trade it for anything, but it's also like very hard work and also different kinds of problems that you don't deal with the, you know, at a normal stable job. Mm-hmm. So I think like just considering that.
What sort of motivation, do you find yourself at? Like what motivates you to keep going? There's no, with a stable corporate job, you have to show up and you get that paycheck every 2 weeks.
But then you get to enjoy your time off. Like that's really, like I never really have like true time off.
Right, right. Anymore. The work-life balance isn't really a thing with your job, right?
Right.
Or unless you like specifically create that for yourself,
and
right?
And like, it's also kind of like a mind fog, like for lack of a better word. But like, you know, I feel like one, I can't really complain about my job to other people because no one really knows what goes into it. And so I just sound kind of like entitled. But two, like having to balance all the opportunities that we get is very just weird. Like, well, like for example, we got invited to a free trip to the Bahamas in January and it's completely unpaid though. So it's like, it kind of forces you like having all of these like once in a lifetime opportunities, like just forces you to like really realize your values and like do some like, I guess, introspection about your priorities and like, how do I want to spend my time, you know? And that's like something that you don't really have to deal with a stable job.
That maybe like people wouldn't normally
like,
think of.
Yeah, because like we definitely have said, you know, we used to say yes to like every amazing opportunity that presented itself. And like, I was exhausted and it was just very tiring because there's so much work that goes into it as well. It's not like just a free trip. But then like to think about turning down, and not only like free trips to amazing places, but a lot of money as well. If it's too much work, like it's just a lot of like constantly assessing what am I valuing right now? And you know, what makes sense for my life?
Cause there's so many types of things, right? Like a lot of people are very focused on their career or their family. Right. And there's not like a lot of things that are pulling from them. It's kind of like I think of that, as kind of the two things in someone's life. And older people I talk to, it's like, oh yeah, I worked too much and I wish I spent more time with my kids or my family, or like, I wish I focused more on my career, I would have advanced more, whatever it is. And then, for
that's
you, I feel
different.
Like it's like,
yeah,
it's like, should I do this? Should I do this? Should I do this?
Like
there's so many things
just like asking
at you.
Myself, like, what should I do right now? Like, I almost always feel like I'm making the wrong decision because there's so many options. Like we could go to the Bahamas, we could go here, we could, like, so many people message me every day to like come stay at their Airbnb or whatever. So it's like, that sounds ridiculous to complain about, but it's like just like kind of figuring out what you value and like what makes sense. So
sure,
yeah,
so
that's like, I guess, something to consider
for somebody who maybe is a step before being able to make that leap into full time, you know, and they're thinking, hey, this sounds interesting to me, I think I might be good at it. what are some must-have skills yeah. that somebody needs to have in order to be successful at this?
I think you definitely just truly have to love it. Like, you want to take your camera out when you're not being paid. Like, you love photography, you love content creation and videos. And then resiliency is a big one, because you're going to just like be rejected all the time, essentially. Mm-hmm. And persistence. Those are the three that I would say.
Yeah. So I feel like sometimes you talk about, like, if you're struggling at the beginning, hoping that once you make it, like once you get your big break, it will be better. It won't be better.
It's always,
there's going to be those challenges. Yeah, right. Exactly. So it's like, if you're not liking it at the beginning, you're not going to like mm-hmm. it later on. So that's like a major thing for someone who's coming into it. Mm-hmm. It's like, you really need to like this.
Yeah. It has to be worth it for you because mm-hmm. I think, yeah, a lot of smaller creators think like, oh, if I just reached 100,000 followers, like everyone's going to say yes to me and like everything's going to be amazing. And like, yeah, like there are a lot more rewards and like people do say yes easier, but there's still like, you're still going to go through the same things. Like, mm-hmm. so I think that's like a big thing is like, cause it does affect people's mental health a lot more than me. Like I've seen with my friends and I'm like, I don't know, like you maybe should consider not doing it or like, mm-hmm. because if you have a stable job and you a flexible, stable job, like my job that I had was not flexible. Like I had to take off PTO 3 months in advance, which just was like ridiculous for our lifestyle. But if you can just like take off time whenever you want and you have a stable job, then like why change that?
Mm-hmm. Like me. And that's why I still have my job.
Exactly. Like Miles has like the best. exactly. Like you have the best scenario. And like, I think that we wouldn't trade that. And mm-hmm. people just like a lot of creators even like are selling courses, like how to live your dream life. And I'm like, well, they're just like telling you the highlights. And like, yes, there are the highs are like very high, but it's also like a hustle. And like being self-employed is not for everybody.
Sounds like a hook to get you to buy it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. They're using what they
Sarah hates these kind of like things that people say. Well, yeah. It's always like, it's like live your dream life or like,
yeah, learn how to do this. It's a self-help book situation.
Like
right?
maybe you're just need to be happy where you are. Like Miles has like an amazing, like once in a lifetime situation where like he gets so much paternity leave. Like mm-hmm. you have a great
for
work
all
culture.
Of our kids
like
that we have.
Just like recognizing what you have and like
you're working on it.
Yeah. Like, my life looks amazing on the outside, but it's also a lot of work. So like, if you don't love it, you might not like mm-hmm. it. mm-hmm. So it's not everybody's dream life.
What is the best thing that you like about this job?
I mean, I personally love everything about it. Like
everything.
Everything.
Like I love being, I love choosing my own hours. Like I was always the person in school who would not go to class and just study on my own. Cause I felt like I could do things like my way more efficiently. And like, I feel like just managing my own time is like amazing. I love doing that.
Okay.
And then the opportunities that we get, like, I really like that we get to, like meet so many interesting people. And we met the engineers for Chevrolet, for example, on the cars. And they were asking us, like, they were asking me how to make the cars appeal to girls more. And like, just like giving that kind of like, just, and we've met like the head.
What was your answer, by the way? I started to cut you off. I got to know.
I don't even remember what I said.
I had an answer and I'm not a girl. Yeah. I tried to be quiet, but I was like, I said, that blue color, that Toyota.
Yeah.
And all the other car companies have started selling, you know,
that moon color or whatever it is. Yeah. Like, yeah. But I didn't want to be like, well, you need to come out with a whole new color. But that's my answer.
The color.
I love it. Yeah. I love that blue color.
No, I think, you know, you had a good answer. Something like,
I can't remember.
You know, who did well, the Ford with their Bronco, they came out with the Sport.
Yeah.
I know a lot of women like the Sport version of it.
Mm-hmm. Is the Sport like the smaller version?
Yeah. Okay.
It's also the blue color.
Yeah, it has that blue color too, but I know it's like Sarah's commented on it when we've come across it, whereas like the more beefy, like huge tire looking ones, you're kind of like, I'm sure there's a lot of women who would like that too, but it probably appeals more to men.
Yeah. For sure. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like we've met owners of breweries, which has just been, I just love hearing people's stories. And like, I feel like we get to do that a lot. And then I'm also just very frugal. So being able to test out so many cool pieces of gear, And the connections that I made, like all of my best friends are on from Instagram, and like they're just genuine people and I love them. So yeah, I just feel like it literally changed my life for the better.
Yeah, so. I think Sarah, what was always very much,
I think that's like the biggest thing is the community.
Yeah. More of like the entrepreneur type person, like, and not just that, but a person who really needs to do her own thing.
Yeah.
Like me, I'm very good at going to work and not just following someone's orders, but working in a setting like 9 to 5 kind of thing. Like, you're very good at that, right? Like, you went into your job and excelled really, really quickly. Sarah is like she can do it, but
I'm like,
she would
do
much better being her own boss. Yeah. Right. Like doing what she wants
to
do
just
and
cool.
Not
like, I love being able to create opportunities for myself too. Like, I just feel like nothing is off limits. Like, I have things that have seemed impossible to me. Like, I feel like I can achieve if I just like work hard enough.
And have you ever run into the situation where somebody was trying to be your friend just to get an edge in the industry?
I'm conscious of that, but I think like
hard to tell, probably.
I can, yeah, kind of like actually easier to tell almost. Like, I wouldn't hang out with this person in person because I feel like that's where this conversation is going.
Uh-huh.
Like, whereas the people that I have met up with, I feel like it's very genuine and like I feel like they're.
You got a BS detector?
Yeah. I feel like I do, but you never know.
Well, yeah. Some people could be really
and, like,
good at
back,
shadowing that.
Like, a lot of people ask me to hang out, and I'm just like, oh, I don't have time. But then if I'm, like, chatting back and forth, and, like, then we, like, talk about hanging out, like, that is more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure, sure.
That and we have sense. Things in common, and, like, there's a, you know. But, I mean, I feel like we've met, like, we just have so much in common with the people that we've met on Instagram. It's just like a great way to meet people. So
a lot of people make friends in their workplace.
Yeah.
It's very common.
Yeah.
And for the most part, like everybody we've met has been really genuine.
Yeah. And, sure. And it's great too, because they're a lot of them are doing it too. So like talking with them on a more intimate
amazing.
Level,
yeah.
Whereas like some people I feel like you talk to and you don't want to share certain things and they don't want to share certain things with you. Whereas when you're friends with someone, you're a lot more open with them.
Yeah.
And well, so, that's how you, I mean, that's it. There's a shared commonality there, and that's how you can sort of make friendship. Right.
Yeah.
In that
sure.
way it's easy to sort of talk shop mm-hmm. when you're, you know, when your friends, like I would never talk shop with somebody randomly that I made friends outside of work. Cause like, why would they care?
For sure.
You know, but you have that commonality. So it's easier to like, you know, sort of share your experiences. What is the one thing that you don't like about this job?
I feel like I talked about a lot of things that I didn't like.
Yeah. But what's the one thing that sort of sticks out as the biggest sort of thing that really digs into you?
I think just like how like hard it can be some weeks, like on your confidence and your
confidence,
like,
yeah,
yeah, just like how you can get knocked down over and over and over.
Yes, right.
So I just like feel like I haven't really experienced that in life as much. Like, to be fair, in optometry school, like there were preceptors that just knocked you down, but like it wasn't the same like frequency of getting rejected. And I always had like a fear of rejection, but I feel like that has actually improved as I've been more exposed to it. So, yeah, but I think,
fair enough.
We have to take our trash out.
Uh-oh. Your trash day is on Friday.
Unfortunately.
Friday. Wow.
The worst fucking day of the week, excuse my language, but pisses me off.
Wow, Fridays.
This is a whole
That's
topic.
That's interesting.
Yeah, the most common day that we are not home.
Yeah, you got trash piling up at home?
No, we don't. We not always anymore. Have some kind of backup. Someone's either staying at our house or we've asked neighbors or whatever, but yeah, it's so annoying. I'm like, come on, Wednesday should just be trash day for everyone. Everyone's home Wednesday.
Ours is Monday morning.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
Sunday night. That's like, in my opinion, the best day, you know,
because
I'm right. I got to go to work the next I'm home.
Yeah.
We're not home a lot. So
yeah. For you guys,
Tuesday would be nice or Wednesday. Right?
Yeah.
Wednesday. Yeah. Wednesday. Yeah. Middle of the week. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Sarah, for coming on and sharing some of this knowledge. And it's all very interesting. I'm sure our audience wants to know a lot. Is there anything else, closing thoughts that you want to share? We covered so much. This is
I know, yeah.
It's fascinating
stuff. I feel like just like the stigma around influencers that they just get free stuff. And like, Yeah, I just feel like everybody I know who does it works really hard at it, and it's just not understood. Like, nobody, it's such a new industry. I think since 2010, maybe, mm-hmm. it started being an industry at all, yep. and now it's growing. It's like a $1 billion industry. So I think there's going to be majors on it, and it's already getting more mainstream. But I think if you're kind of like, if you have prejudices against it and you're avoiding it, like, you're just kind of stuck in the past and you need to accept it because it's the future.
What is, if you, that's a good point to bring up. If you are somebody, who finds this interesting and you're in college, what, and you want to put money into the college degree that best yields,
I wish I got a degree in marketing.
Marketing, sure. communications, that type of thing.
Yeah, because I could have gotten a degree in anything and been an optometrist, but that would have been super useful, I think. I mean, who knows?
Would a business degree also be sort of valuable in this aspect? Yeah.
Yeah, it's also like thinking back, right? Do you have an optometry degree? You've been an optometrist, so you have that as something you could always do. You always do, right?
And that, honestly, I don't think I would have done this job if I didn't have that. Mm-hmm. Just because I'm so risk averse.
But if there was someone who was like, I want to do this, I'm going to be good at it.
I would say get a different job first, like do what I did, but get a marketing or business degree, go to some sort of professional school like nursing or optometry, so you have a backup. Mm-hmm. Because I think I have like a very unique and like amazing situation where if this fails, I can just work tomorrow and you just, you know, it's very stressful if otherwise.
Have that plan B.
Yeah, if you don't have a degree in anything else, then. Although I do think it's valuable knowledge and you could work in marketing. Mm-hmm. So
maybe get into marketing, get a job in that while you're trying to make it.
Yeah.
And then hope it works out. Mm-hmm. And then you have that experience. Because I feel like there's a lot of things that you had to learn on your own, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was Googling, like, what does evergreen mean? For marketing, because I just had no experience, but yeah,
there you go. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, and thank you all for listening. If you want to head to our Instagram, you can follow Adventuring Eyes. You have a website too, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to, is it adventuringeyes.com?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Well, adventuringeyes.com, that's where you can get some more robust content from Miles and Sarah. Of course, Adventuring Eyes on Instagram. And for us, it's at the Lucky Duck, at the Lucky Duck. We're on Spotify. We get video on Spotify now. So if you guys want to watch on Spotify instead of going to YouTube, there. We've got the videos now. And of course, if you want to know how to make a mezcal old fashioned, you can head to our Instagram. I post the drinks and the recipes every week. So
guys, the photos are dope. You got to go look at them.
The photos
are
amazing. And until next time, thanks for listening and adios.